Hello and welcome to the In the Pen podcast, a podcast about relievers, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Jake Crumpler, and as always, I'm joined by Rick Graham, Pitcherless bullpen expert. And Rick, we are headed into July, and boy, is it hot. It is 102 degrees where I live right now, and it's completely deadly. And we'll see how long I survive in this podcast, but if I suddenly go silent like halfway through, just assume I've passed out from heat exhaustion.
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't been that much better out here, out east. It's been a little cool the last 2 days, but yeah, I feel for you. I mean, you got to get AC wherever you are. I don't know how you survive without it. I would be dying over there.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. I realize I left that out of my opener. It's just like, oh, it's 100 degrees outside. I'm dying because I'm outside. No, I'm inside. My house is also nearing 100 degrees because I don't have
AC. That's crazy.
Yeah. So my mom lives like 20 minutes away and she's got AC. So I'll go stay with her for the night and then head back here to sleep. But that's the only way I can stay cool right now. Good thing I move out at the end of July, though. But my next place will definitely need to have some AC because I can't do this.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, living up out there, too. I mean, yeah, I feel like it's a necessity. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when I lived in the South Bay, too, my apartment didn't have AC either. And that was worse because it was a two-story apartment. We were on the second floor.
Yeah.
And it was just the sun was just beating right down on top of the apartment building the whole time. And it was awful. I just remember like I didn't have a job during the time. It was right after I graduated from college, like 2021 after COVID. Mm-hmm. And I would just be sitting at my apartment while my ex-girlfriend was at work. And I would just be like trying to write an article, just dripping sweat. Just like sitting at the dinner table, dripping sweat. It's not the best like body state to be in trying to be creative.
No, it's the worst. Just because you're focused. Yeah, it just takes away all your energy and focus from what you're trying to actually produce. And yeah, I feel you. Please get an AC, man. We need to keep you cool out there. I'm definitely a cold weather person. I like to sleep at like, you know, 68 to 70. Yeah. Keep it cool. And yeah, that's how I need to operate.
Yeah, I love sleeping in the cold. I can't do the cold during the day, but cold at night, that's perfect.
Sure.
I want a reason to put my covers on.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no matter how much energy this heat takes out of me, I do have enough to survive at least one podcast. And today we'll be discussing the news and notes from the past week. Well, it's less than a week because we recorded last Thursday. Today we're recording on Tuesday, July 2nd, because obviously Thursday is the 4th of July. So we rescheduled to recording a little earlier this week. So we've got fewer news and notes and transactions and injuries from the past week because it's less than a week. But nonetheless, we'll cover those. Then we'll move over to the three up, three down section as we discuss the closers rising and falling on Rick's ranks. And then we'll head to our main topic as we prepare our listeners for the trade deadline, discussing teams that are completely out of the race and which relievers might be dealt from those teams. And then looking at some teams that are on the bubble and seeing who they might be able to sell, and then touching on a couple of buyers. But we'll hop right into the news and notes, Drew Smith of the Mets has significant damage to the ligament in his elbow and is likely headed for Tommy John surgery. He'll receive a second opinion before undergoing surgery, but it seems like it's all but certain that he's going to be going under the knife and missing the rest of this year and all of next year.
Yeah, that's an unfortunate. I mean, this Mets team is surging right now, and you know, Smith already had an IL stint and he came back and he's been pitching well. So this is a bit of a shock. Especially with, you know, the guys that they're down already in that bullpen. They'll obviously, I don't know. I mean, we're going to talk about, you know, the trade deadline stuff, and there's a lot of teams that we're still not 100% on whether they're going to be buyers or sellers, but this Mets team definitely looks like they're going to be buying. So yeah, with Smith out, with, you know, Sean Reed Foley's down, they're
really,
Rayleigh's already been out. Yeah, already out for the year. I mean, they're going to have to add at least two arms if they're looking to, contending and be a wild card team. So, the Smith injury is a huge blow, but they still have, you know, they still have Diaz coming back this weekend, and Daniel Nunez has been pitching well, and mm-hmm. they can just add like another, you know, one lefty, one righty. I think they'll be okay at least for the playoffs.
Yeah, that'll do it. The next bit of news is Liam Hendricks of the Red Sox, who threw a second bullpen session on Friday. It consisted of only fastballs, but Hendricks felt good and will throw three bullpen sessions this week before being evaluated for a possible rehab assignment. So we could see Liam Hendricks return before the end of July.
Yeah, I think that's... I don't know why this just feels all rushed. I would love to see some velo readings or hear something about velo.
Sure.
When it comes to him, because this is what he's 11 months into his rehab here. So this is coming along very quickly.
Did he do the brace procedure?
And maybe I think he had Tommy John. Yeah. He didn't do the brace. That's why it's like, unless that was misreported, but, we'll see. I mean, he's only throwing fastballs now, so that's, he still has to, want to see how he reacts after, an up and down throwing breaking balls and whatnot. I'm still thinking August maybe, and it's just going to be weird to see like what, there's still the Red Sox are, right, behind the, in the wild card race. They're only a couple games back. It's, what happens with Kenley Jansen? Cause he was, a month ago, he was a sure thing to get traded. And now how do you trade your closer in the middle of a, wild card chase? But I guess if you're hopeful that Liam Hendricks is ready to go, maybe you can move Jansen while getting Hendricks back and it kind of washes out, I guess. But it'll be interesting to see how this Red Sox bullpen looks a month from now. Because it's not just Jansen, Chris Martin's also a free agent to be and would definitely get a lot of trade value or trade, excitement around the league for him. So yeah, I it'll be interesting to see how this Red Sox bullpen shapes up over the next month.
Yeah. So that's Liam Hendricks throwing some bullpen sessions as he works his way back from Tommy John surgery. Sticking in the AL East, the Blue Jays shut down Jordan Romano from his rehab program after he experienced elbow discomfort while throwing on Friday. Romano will visit professionals to determine his next step, but this is a huge delay in his recovery, and it likely means we won't see Romano until August. That's pretty terrible, especially considering that he was probably somebody that should at least have been on the block at the deadline.
Yeah, I wonder if this is a situation where they just shut him down. I don't know. Maybe he just comes back in September and they're just careful with him. I don't know what's going on. This Toronto team, they just want to trade, the 1 year guys, the guys who are free agents to be at the end of the season. And that's so they were saying they were going to hold on to Romano. But yeah, I don't really know how reasonable it is to think that they're just going to sell guys this deadline. And then all of a sudden next year, they're going to be a competitive team. So Romano, he'd probably be the closer when he gets back because Jimmy Garcia is probably going to be traded. Mm-hmm. So at least Romano can get his job back. But yeah, we won't see him until at least August and maybe even later if they're just going to play this really carefully because there's no reason to rush him back with them being, what is it, like 8 games out of the playoff spot right now. So unless they make a huge run, I don't think Romano is going to be rushed back anytime soon.
Yeah. And speaking of Yimi Garcia, he threw a bullpen session on Sunday and he's also nearing eligibility to return from the 15-day IL. And so he could be activated this week or this weekend without a rehab assignment. So Yimi Garcia could be back to reclaim the closer role that Chad Green is currently holding.
Yeah, I hope at least, I'm still kind of holding on to him in a few places. I want to at least get like maybe one or two more weeks of closer, stuff from him and get a couple more saves before he gets traded. And even still, there's talked about like the Royals are a team that needs a closer. So I feel like that could be a good fit for Garcia as a rental. He's been really just great this year and should be, if not closing, being like an eighth inning guy somewhere, no matter where he ends up at the deadline. So yeah, I'm guessing the Blue Jays want him to prove he's healthy in a couple outings and then they'll probably look to trade him somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Next, we've got Brock Stewart of the Twins, who's scheduled to throw two live batting practice sessions this week. Justin Topa, also of the Twins, will be joining him by throwing a pair of bullpen sessions. Stewart, though, is the more notable one. He pitched to a 0.68 ERA across 13 and a third innings with a 32.7% strikeout rate before landing on the IL. Is this somebody that you're going to be picking up like prematurely in really deep holds leagues, or we're just going to wait until Stewart's back?
Probably can wait. I do like Stewart a lot. I want to see it. Both him and Topa, it's been, you know, they've been very slowly progressing. So I do kind of want to see, you know, I want to see them get a little bit closer here to you know, a return. But yeah, at least they're progressing finally. You know, Stewart's been out for a while. Topa hasn't even debuted with the Twins yet. So, mm-hmm. You know, their bullpen's been really good as is, but it will certainly help getting these two back, especially Stewart.
Yeah, that bullpen is going to be absolutely deadly.
If they're at 100%. Yeah, I know. It's really crazy how deep that bullpen, especially if maybe Duran can get back to you know, being a thing.
That wouldn't even be fair.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, a very fun bullpen.
Yeah, so that's Brock Stewart and Justin Topa nearing returns. Julian Merriweather of the Cubs threw a 25-pitch live BP on Tuesday, so it looks like he could return in the next 2 to 4 weeks, I guess. He's probably still a week or two away from going out on a rehab assignment, at which point we can expect him to return within the week.
Yeah, so this is one where I would be looking to potentially stash if you can at this point. Just knowing, you know, there's going to be openings for closer roles, but in Chicago, I mean, if he's healthy, he's the best option they have to close out games. And he does seem to be ahead of Adbert Alzolay as far as a return goes. So if he returns, I mean, and, you know, Hector Neris is a, you know, probably, I think they'll try to trade him. I don't know what type of value he has right now, but I mean, if they're trying to trade 1 year guys, like they said, they will, yeah, Neris probably is going to go somewhere for whatever they can get. So Merriweather could be the closer for the last 2 months of the year. And I mean, if he's healthy, that's a, all of a sudden you got an elite closer just coming off the waiver wire in, you know, late July. So worth a look if you have an IL spot where you can stash him. And even if you don't have an IL spot, maybe in the next 2 weeks, you know, see how he progresses and maybe even just, you know, keep him at the end of your bench because, I really like the upside here if he can stay healthy for 2 months.
Yeah, very good point there on Julian Merriweather. And our last bit of news is Sean Reed Foley of the Mets, who hasn't started throwing yet. He landed on the IL like a week ago or so. So this likely means he won't return until after the All-Star break. He has been a key part of the Mets bullpen, sort of helping out that depth. So his return will be huge in helping this bullpen survive as it continues to struggle with the plethora of injuries and suspensions that we've discussed throughout the year. But Reed Foley, will be back probably not for 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah, again, like we talked about, the Mets, just another, you know, they keep plugging away. They keep, you know, churning. They keep winning games. They're about to win a game tonight as well in extra innings. So nothing can really stop. Yeah, even injuries can't stop them. I mean, it's very, really fun. Who would have thought the Mets would have been the fun team of the year, like to kind of follow and see them go on this impressive run. Foley was a huge underrated part to you know what they were doing in the past month or so, and at least he's gonna be back. He's not like Drew Smith where he's not gonna be back at all this season. He should be back hopefully in August, I would think, and you know, add some depth, add some length to that bullpen. But like I said before, they still need to add some pieces if they're gonna be serious contenders.
Mm-hmm. If you had told me that the Mets mascot this season in the offseason was Grimace, I think I could have told you that they were going to have a surprisingly good season.
So between Grimace and, you know, Jose Iglesias being like, I didn't know he was a pop star. I mean, that's awesome.
Better than Yoan Moncada, huh?
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, just it's super fun team all of a sudden, the Mets. Like, who would have thought that?
Yeah, well, we'll see how long that lasts. But yeah, that'll wrap up our news. We had no injuries this past week, no new ones at least. But we did have one transaction as AJ Minter was activated from the 15-day IL by the Braves. He's been out since May 30th with left hip inflammation, so he didn't pitch at all in June. Daisbell Hernandez was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. But Minter should reclaim one of the top two setup roles in Atlanta, likely the top left-handed option there.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably going to be plugged right back into a seventh or eighth inning role, most likely. You know, we did talk about, was it last week? We talked about, like, Dylan Lee's had an unreal run. Uh-huh. And I hope Lee still gets, like, some holds chances here and there because, and even before the injury, and it could have been because of the injury, Minter just wasn't pitching that great. All season he's been a little bit, he hasn't been himself really, so... Yeah, we'll see if Minter isn't 100%, if he's not looking like his, you know, last year self or his typical healthy self. I hope Dylan Lee gets a chance to get some holds. But, you know, they have a really deep bullpen, obviously, mm-hmm. and there's, you know, they're still going to give Minter every chance to reclaim that, you know, top setup role. So, yeah, hopefully he's healthy and ready to go the rest of the year.
Yeah, and that will wrap up our transactions, injuries, news, and notes section. Now we'll head into the three up, three down section, but first we're going to take a quick break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen discussing relievers. We just wrapped up our transactions, injuries, news, and notes section, and now we'll talk about the closers rising and falling on Rick's ranks as we enter the three up, three down section of the podcast. We'll start with the risers as Raisel Iglesias, with the name I think sort of fits there. This is second year in a row on, or second year,
second week,
second week yeah. in a row. Yeah, rising up the list.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't go up the list much last week. It was more of a, hey, his velo is starting to pick up again. And yeah, looks like it's going to stick. And I just, you know, the strikeout rate is down for the season, but even over the past, you know, 8 weeks, been pretty good sample size. He's at a 27.3% strikeout rate, 32.8% CSW. So that's, you know, above average numbers there. And basically where he is typically at, you know, as far as career numbers go. So it's looking like he's kind of back to being, you know, the Iglesias we've been used to the last, you know, he's been so consistent and steady for the past couple of years. He's been one of the rare steady closers. So I think he's back to being that guy. And with there being, you know, some other names here that are kind of, you know, more question marks, I think it's safe to assume Iglesias is a top 10 to 12 closer right now. And, you know, someone you shouldn't have any worries about rostering, which is different from what I said about a month ago when, mm-hmm. you know, the velo was down and he was missing no bats. It's at least, you know, it looks like he's, you know, figured it out. So good to see that from him.
Yeah, I mean, the change in bat missing is honestly ridiculous. We talked about it last time, how he was just not able to strike out multiple batters in outings. And then when we were covering it, he was doing it recently. He did it again on Saturday. And by it, mm-hmm. I mean, strike out multiple batters, which makes that four outings of his last five in which he struck out multiple batters. Entering June 15th, he had struck out multiple batters in just three outings prior, and now he's done it four times in his last five. Just absolutely ridiculous. A switch has definitely been flipped here for Raisel Iglesias, and that's good to see, and that's why he's rising up the ranks. Our second riser, as we stick in the NL East, is Kyle Finnegan, who, I mean, you know, if somebody's going to be a mascot of somebody that we're going to, like, say, I don't want to say bad things. Bad things about him, negative things about him. And then to prove us wrong, I mean, Kyle Finnegan is that guy. He did it all year last year, and he's doing it even more so this year. Why is Kyle Finnegan rising up your ranks this week?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we can admit we're wrong on this one. We slept on Finnegan. I slept on Finnegan at least. And I guess the takeaway here is if you're throwing 97 and have like a walk rate under, you know, 97 plus with a walk rate under 10%, you probably are going to have success as a closer, because that seems mm-hmm. to be doing the trick for pretty much everyone. You know, all these closers having success. And, you know, he added the sweeper, which hasn't even been that big of a factor. Yeah. That wasn't even that made, I thought like, oh, maybe the sweeper will change, but it hasn't been a factor. And he's just, you know, past 8 weeks, 23.2% strikeout minus walk rate. 2.81 xFIP. And you know, you see how bad Hunter Harvey's been pitching lately. So I mean, job security is definitely in Finnegan's favor if he stays with Washington. They could always trade him. He does have, I think, 1 or 2 years left. But I would trade that. I would trade him if I were the Nats, because you know they're not gonna. They're getting there. They're getting close, but I don't think they're competing in that Kyle Finnegan window of the next two years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or next year. So, you know, sell high right now while you can. And, you know, you can find someone, you know, you're gonna have to shore up that bullpen. Once you start being serious contenders anyway. So yeah. I don't think Finnegan's really a part of that. Maybe he is, maybe they just decide to lock him up long-term, but, I don't know. I would definitely consider them moving him.
Yeah, I think that would be the smart move for them. And I think I figured out what we've missed with him the past couple of years. So entering 2023, he had always been a sinker splitter pitcher, and then mostly a sinker slider pitcher. He was like 80% sinkers, 12% sliders, and 9% splitters. 2023, he basically scrapped the slider, started throwing the splitter way more, and then transitioned from sinkers to four seamers. And so that was like an okay move, as I think he had a similar floor there, but the ceiling was a lot higher because I think the fastball is going to give him more opportunities at swings and misses. And then this year, what we didn't catch is that he's added an inch to his IVB on the four seamer, which makes sense considering he hasn't been throwing it for that long. So this is like his first full year with it, his first like year really being able to toy with it and improve it. So that IVB has made the pitch way better, like more swinging strikes, more called strikes. CSW is up almost 5%. PLV is up like huge amount. It's an 88th percentile fastball now. And then that has helped the splitter play up because there's a larger difference in the break there. Because the fastball isn't dropping as much, and that pitch, the splitter, has seen its swing strike rate raised by 3%, and the PLV raise a little bit as well. So I think just having that four seamer for a second full season has been a huge difference for Finnegan this year.
Yeah, I mean that's clearly the biggest thing, is the four seam difference, and the location's been a lot better as well. Just the overall command of it up in the zone. So yeah, the extra. The added IVB helps. You know, he's still giving up a lot of hard contact, so I'm not, you know, I not sure this is going to last forever. That's why if I'm Washington, I just think I cash in now and get what I can for him. But it's, you know, for those who took a chance on him in drafts and are rostering him, it's been a nice gamble and well worth it at this point, with a sub one whip and a 2.04 ERA of 22 saves so far.
Yeah. So,
yeah, huge. He's having a great season. Definitely going to be an all-star. And yeah, we'll see what the second half has in store for him. Cause I want to be positive, but we'll see. There's, you know, a lot of hard contact still from him. And that's always been a thing. One of his issues.
Yeah. Well, that's Kyle Finnegan. And our last riser is Craig Kimbrell of the Orioles. He's been really good recently. Ever since returning to the closer role like a month and a half or so ago, he has just been absolutely dominant. One of the best closers in baseball. Since May 10th, Craig Kimbrell has allowed just one earned run, meaning he has a 0.53 ERA across his last 17 innings pitched. But what did he do this week to deserve another raise?
Yeah, it's more of just, you know, what he's done over the past, you know, two months, essentially. The past 8 weeks, he's got basically a 35% K rate, 2.8 Sierra. You know, that strikeout rate is just, we've seen a huge dip, and we'll talk about it with the guys who are falling. It's been a lot of, you know, dips in strikeout rates amongst closers that we're used to seeing, you know, high strikeout rates from. So, like we talked about, you know, on Duran last week, he's all of a sudden like a sub 20% strikeout rate guy, which is just like crazy to even, like, if someone told me that at the beginning of the season, I'd be like, what are you talking about? Yeah. Like you have the wrong guy.
He's throwing with his left hand.
Yeah. Like it doesn't make any sense. Even just like losing a mile per hour, it doesn't make sense that he's down that much. But, Kimbrell, it's still at his age, and he's lost velocity, but he's found a way to still strike out 35% of hitters over the past 2 weeks or past 8 weeks. So, like, you know, it starts with command with him, and he's just, you know, filling up the strike zone and trusting his stuff. And I wonder, you know, again, teams could, you know, adjust to that and start being more aggressive with him. But for now, it's, you know, he's definitely like a, but given his upside with the strikeouts and, you know, the team he plays for, it's, you know, he's, you know, top 8-10 closer. And I feel pretty safe about that, just, you know, between the upside and the floor. I think the Orioles are going to add, they're going to have to add at least one reliever. I don't think they need to add a closer, like a closer type, like they had originally talked about. Yeah. I mean, again, Tanner Scott back to Baltimore would be fun, but I don't know if that's the type of move. I mean, I could see it, but I don't know if that's the type of move that they make, or if it's more of a, you know, a Kouliam type replacement where it's like a lefty specialist. So, yeah, I feel like for now, Kimbrel's pretty safe and locked in into that closer role. And, you know, the upside's still there with the strikeout rate.
Yeah, and I think he's one save shy of tying Francisco Rodriguez for fourth on the all-time saves leaderboard. Mm. Yeah,
that's
and
crazy.
And so is Kenley. Yeah. They're both tied right now.
Right, yeah. I mean,
last time I checked on Sunday.
And they're still, still got a lot left in the tank. Yeah.
I know. Yeah. I mean, they can definitely surpass Lee Smith, who's at 478. They're both at 436. But then it's a long road to Trevor Hoffman and Mariano Rivera. Yeah. I think they could end 3-4.
Yeah, for sure. That would be pretty cool to see those guys from, you know, our generation here being that high. When everyone thought like closers and saves were
gone.
Extinct. And all of a sudden you have two guys, and even Rivera is not, you know, he's not that far retired. So, even Hoffman too. So
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Those are our risers. To recap, Raisel Iglesias, Kyle Finnegan, and Craig Kimbrel are climbing up the ranks. To accommodate them, though, other closers have to fall down the ranks, so we'll discuss those guys now. The first one is Paul Sewald, and I know you opened your closing time article with all three of these guys, and I was like, wow, we're just calling everybody out right at the top. We'll start with Paul Sewald, and I assume this is not because of the way he's been pitching, because ever since making his debut, he's been incredible. Paul Sewald, in his return to the mound, allowed one run. Since then, he has not allowed a run.
Yep.
He has gone 15 and two-thirds consecutive innings without allowing a run.
Yeah, I think it's just about like just pumping the brakes a little bit, because he's having trouble missing bats, and eventually it's going to catch up to you. You're going to start letting up more runs. I don't care how much weak contact you allow. You know, eventually you're going to walk somebody, then you're going to allow a bloop hit, and, you know, it's just going to catch up to you. So, you know, past 8 weeks, he's a 3.99 XFIP and a 27% CSW, which are both, I mean, the XFIPs, whatever, but the 27%, you know, called strike swing and miss rate. I mean, that's just really low for a closer who has, you know, a 0.48 whip and 5.54 ERA in the season. And there's also the fact, you know, I don't think the Diamondbacks really have, you know, tipped their hand as far as, you know, are they going to be buyers or sellers? And if they're sellers, I mean, Sewald's definitely going to be the first one to go, or one of the first ones to go, because, you know, free agent to be, and those two ratios stick out as like, oh, this guy's an elite closer, or this guy's going to really help us out in a setup role or a closer role. So he could definitely get the Diamondbacks a pretty good return. If they decide to go that way. And again, you know, we're going to kind of talk about, there's not a ton of closer openings. So unless you end up in Kansas City, it's kind of like if you're a closer that gets moved this deadline, you're probably going to end up in a setup role. So, you know, that's not something we can really speculate with Sewald, but I'd say there's about a 50% chance he gets moved. So just another thing to keep in mind, along with the, you know, lack of swinging miss ability.
It's really going to be dependent on how the Diamondbacks do in the next couple of weeks, because they're currently 41-43. So it's like, I mean, if they're at 500, I think they're going to buy. But if they perform poorly over the next couple of weeks, I think they're sellers. Either way, I feel like Paul Sewald is a sell high.
Yeah, I would think so for them. You're saying
for fantasy managers.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. If someone just sees that ERA whip and the saves, and yeah, they get excited over that, definitely sell high. He's, you know, not his value. He's just kind of like Finnegan. It's like the value is probably not going to get any higher. So yeah, I would be looking to move guys like Sewald, Finnegan, Helsley. I think now is the time to kind of move on from them and you know, cash in on those chips. And then you can always, you know, replenish saves after the deadline, because there might not be a ton of, you know, closer openings, but there's going to be a bunch of closer openings once these closers get traded. So, you know, AJ Puck, possibly Kevin Ginkel, a bunch of other teams, you know, have openings too. So yeah, there'll be chances to pick up saves in the next couple weeks.
All right, and that's Paul Sewald. Our next faller is Pete Fairbanks, who pretty much same situation as Sewald, where he's pitched really well since returning from the IL. 3 earned runs across his last 21 and two-thirds innings pitched, meaning he's got a 1.25 ERA since May 11th. That's really good, but the strikeouts are still lacking from a guy who was once one of the best strikeout men in baseball.
Yeah, I mean, this is one where I am trying to figure out what exactly. I haven't dived in deep enough, I guess, to find out what's going on here. But, you know, this is a guy who had 39.1% strikeout rate between 2022 and 2023. And, you know, over the past 8 weeks, it's at 24.7%. Only a 10.7% swinging strike rate from him. It's just, you know, I don't. Like the velo is down a little bit, and that's probably the, you know, the biggest reason here. Mm-hmm. But I just, yeah, I feel like there's something else going on. I mean, I like to, you know, look at the zone contact and O swing, and kind of like, you know, zone contact minus O swing. So to get like a general sense of how you're, you know, if you're missing bats in the zone and getting people to chase out of the zone, and you know, you take that number, 58.2% for him, that's third worst amongst closers over the past 8 weeks. So, you know, he's hittable in the zone, and he's not getting swings out of the zone. So it's just so un Pete Fairbanks like. So, you know, I want to say just the velo, if the velo increases, if you can figure that out, it's going to change everything. But I don't know, man. It's, you know, his slider doesn't look as sharp, and I don't have the exact metrics. I just, you know, from seeing him, the slider just doesn't look like it's, you know, fooling anyone. It's not as sharp as it usually is. And, you know, he has dealt with injuries in the past and just came back from one a couple months, last month. So maybe something's still lingering there. But yeah, it's been a concerning. You know, he's not hurting you, so it's fine. Mm-hmm. You know, you still want to hold on to Fairbanks to see if he can figure this out. Cause, you know, once it clicks, he's going to be a top, you know, five option, just like we saw last year. But right now, he's just not that guy. So hopefully we can get it turned around, cause you know how much we love Pete Fairbanks here. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's not great to see what's going on right now.
It always feels like the second half is his half. Each of the past 2 years, that was like when he took off.
Yeah, I mean, really was. I mean, was it the second half? But like, I think it was last year. It was like June, middle of June is when he started to, you know, turn things around. And that's what I was kind of hoping for this year. It's like, all right, where is it? Where is that, you know, that, you know, extra velo bump and, you know, the swing and miss stuff. But it just hasn't happened yet. And it's, you know, it's kind of the same case with Yoan Duran. And, you know, both those guys have dealt with injuries this year too. So maybe that's part of it. But yeah, I want to see, hopefully we can see both those guys, you know, get back to their old ways, because those are two of the funnest and, you know, most dominant closers in the game when they're right.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And I think the velocity on that fastball is huge, because I mean, outside of just the velocity aspect, he's also got less extension on it. The drop in velocity has probably led to a drop in his IVB as well. Which all of that combined probably leads to the slider performing worse. So yeah, hopefully he can regain the velocity or maybe get a little bit better command, because usually when somebody's throwing slower, you're like, oh, well maybe they're making up for it with better command. No, he's got the worst walk rate he's had since like 2020. So I don't know what he's going to do, but he's going to figure it out. And we're all rooting for him. That's Pete Fairbanks. And our last faller is Evan Phillips. And thank you for that. Sorry.
As long as it's a Dodger, you don't care. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm just like really mad at the Dodgers because I streamed James Paxton. And yeah, that will never happen again. I will never stream a Dodger again. I he's been so solid the whole year. And I was just like, oh, I'll stream him one time. Oh, how about 9 earned runs? Take him out before that, please. Before he gets to 9 earned runs. Like, he doesn't need to get that far into it. And then, of course, I streamed Cade Smith today for the first time, and he goes like 3 earned run against the White Sox.
Oh, no.
Yeah,
what are the odds of that?
I gotta figure things out. But Evan Phillips is falling down the ranks. He returned from the IL recently on June 1st. In June, he pitched to a 3.27 ERA across 11 innings, though the strikeouts weren't really there. We saw them fall down to 20.9% in the month. Is that the main reason why Phillips is falling for you?
Yeah, it's a, you know, the strikeout drop from once he's returned from the IL, 20.9% strikeout rate since he returned over 11 innings, 4.19 xFIP. He's still, you know, I'm not like totally out on him. I think he only dropped one or two spots. Yeah, it's just, you know, he hasn't seen the big decrease in velo like the other guys, although his, you know, the cutter and slider kind of dropped a little bit since he's returned. So I'm not overly concerned, but, you know, this is also a Dodger team that they're obviously they're all in, their chips are all in, and they're looking at Luis Robert and, Garrett Crochet. Like, they don't need those guys, but so it makes me think, like, what if they, you know, go after some of these closers and that are available and just, you know, trust Phillips more as like a eighth inning guy and come playoff time. And I don't know, you just never know with the Dodgers, and I doubt they get a closer that supplants Phillips, but it's definitely possible with them. So you know, he's been more just average and mediocre than a top, you know, 5-6 option like I thought he might be at one point. So until we see those strikeouts improve and just the bat missing ability improve, he's, you know, fallen down to like the 10 spot for now.
That's fair. Yeah, he'll still probably get a lot of saves pitching for the Dodgers. Yeah. But like you said, we'll have to keep an eye on that team during the trade deadline to see if they push Phillips out of that role. Nonetheless, that bullpen is going to be deadly if they add anybody to it. Because with like Phillips, Hudson, Vessi, and Trinan, that top four is crazy. So if you push those guys down a slot, a tier in the bullpen, oh my gosh, that's... And
Joe Kelly's coming back. He's starting to throw again. Yeah. I mean, could be very... It's obviously going to be... I mean, if they get everyone healthy there, they're going to... It's going to be a stacked team no matter what. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it just comes down to health with that roster.
Yep, and that will wrap up our 3-up, 3-down section. To recap, our risers were Raisel Iglesias, Kyle Finnegan, and Craig Kimbrell, and our fallers were Paul Sewald, Pete Fairbanks, and Evan Phillips. Now we'll move into our main topic as we prime everybody for the trade deadline. But first, we're going to take a quick break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen discussing relievers. We're heading into our trade deadline primer as we're in July, and the trade deadline is coming up on July 30th, which is a Sunday. So it should definitely make the fab run on that day absolutely bonkers. But nonetheless, we'll go through this by talking first about the teams that are way out of it. Five or more than five games out of a playoff spot. Those teams are most likely to say or sell. So we'll go through and talk about all their relievers and, you know, if they could hold on to a closer role or a setup role wherever they go, and then who might be the most likely to replace them. And then we'll have our second group of teams, which are the teams that are within five games back. Those teams could go either way in the next couple of weeks as their play on the field over that time will determine whether or not they're sellers or buyers. And then, as I mentioned at the top of the podcast, we'll touch on a couple of the buyers that could be looking to add a closer, though they're not many, as Rick has hinted out at throughout the podcast. But we'll hop right into it with the teams that are more than five games back, starting with the Blue Jays, who have been a hot topic of conversation throughout the whole year because they've got a number of guys in the bullpen. This team was supposed to be competitive, but that has not been the case this year. They're in last place. They're looking like sellers, and they've got a lot of guys they can sell, namely Yimi Garcia, who's set to be a free agent at the end of this year and has been pitching to the best season of his career.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the guys who I'm, you know, as far as guys on the move, closers on the move, he's, you know, right up there at the top of the list, I think, for available options, assuming he comes back healthy. You know, I do have a little bit of concern with that because it was an elbow injury, but I think as long as he proves that he's, you know, the velo is still there, you know, he should be on every team's, you know, list of available potential targets. So, Yeah, I would love to see him still close out games, but again, it's probably just Kansas City. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as far as who replaces him if he gets traded, it will be Romano once he's healthy. But if there's like a, I think Chad Green is potentially available, but he has, I think he's like, he's got like a 10, he's like $10 million next year, I think, which is, seems pretty high for Chad Green mm-hmm. at this stage in his career. So I don't know. They might have a hard time moving him. And he probably, he could end up being, you know, their closer for the next 4 to 8 weeks, depending on how long it takes Romano to get back. So, yeah, I guess Green and deeper leagues is still worth rostering. But, yeah, I think Garcia is about an 80% chance he gets dealt. It sounds like Toronto's willing to deal all their rentals. So, Garcia should be, I think I would have him as like the number two option available. That's definitely going to be traded at the deadline or most likely to be traded behind just Tanner Scott, I think.
Mm-hmm. And then is there anybody else in this bullpen that you expect to be traded? I think Tanner or Trevor Richards is set to be a free agent after this year and probably Eric Swanson too, but he's been pitching in AAA and I have no idea what he's been doing.
I think, yeah, Swanson's a free agent after next year. He's, same situation as Romano contractually. So I, you know, if things were going better, I would have, you know, thought Swanson could be available, but maybe they just, you know, try to get him a change of scenery and a fresh start, just to help the player out. Mm-hmm. You know, Genesis Cabrera is another one who not really worth a lot, but he's a lefty and, you know, teams always try to add like a lefty or two at the deadline just to just shore up things in the bullpen. So I could see Cabrera also being on the move, but yeah, Richards is definitely, I think Garcia and Richards are the top two likely to go there.
Yeah. Cabrera still has another year of control, so no guarantee there. Would you like to guess Eric Swanson's ERA at AAA in 13 innings?
I haven't looked. Is it bad? Oh, man.
No, I'm asking you to guess. I hope you don't.
8.9.
13.15 with an 11.68
FIP. Wow.
Yeah, the whip is at 2.69. That's really good. Yeah, that's too bad. He was so good the last couple of years. I have no idea what's going on. He's not getting traded. I can guarantee you that.
Yeah. Yeah, his value is rock bottom right now. Oh, so, yeah, that's a – they were going to hopefully figure things out with him and get him up in September maybe and, you know, get his confidence back.
DFA him and like hope that somebody
I mean he probably isn't worth, if he keeps, you know, pitching like this, he's not worth qualifying. So yeah, I mean he's probably looking at being a free agent next year after all.
Yeah. All right, our next team is the Tigers. They have, I wouldn't say they have a lot of options here that they could trade. Their closer is Jason Foley, but he has a lot of control left. He won't be a free agent until after the 2027 season. So any team looking to get him will have to give up a lot more to make up for those years of control. Outside of that, it's like, not many guys. I mean, Shelby Miller and Andrew Chafin are there. Those guys were both rentals, so they should be gone, but, I don't think they're going to be making any waves in the fantasy, community.
Yeah, I think it's just Chafin and Miller, really, like you said. I mean, yeah, the rest of the bullpen's kind of got, you know, a lot of control left. And Foley, I think if the right trade came along, if they were to get like a, if someone were to give up like a top 100 prospect for Foley, I feel like they would make the deal. And some, you know, it only takes us one team, maybe someone would be willing to do that. But yeah, I feel like Foley's probably, you know, less than 10% chance he gets moved. But I wouldn't say he's definitely not. I wouldn't say he's not available. It's just it would have to be take a lot to get him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but Chafin and Miller are most definitely on the move. We'll go to the Rangers, who are surprisingly bad this year after winning the World Series last year. But they are rocking a trio of relievers that have had pretty solid seasons in Kirby Yates, David Robertson, and Jose Leclerc. And I think all of them are set to be free agents this offseason. That is the case. I don't think all three of them really have a shot at being a closer anywhere. None of them are going to be a closer anywhere, but Yates and Robertson could definitely be like elite setup men somewhere. And if teams value Leclerc as he's been pitching recently, rather than how he started the year, he should also be somebody that should be given holds opportunities wherever he lands.
Yeah. I mean, if the Rangers, and it's going to be interesting to see what the Rangers end up doing. They are falling out of, you know, the playoff race here, but they are also getting guys like Scherzer back and then DeGrom back eventually. So You know, they could probably get, they're not going to get a ton for Yates and Robertson at their age, and Leclerc just hasn't been consistent enough. So maybe they just decide to stick it out and see how things happen, see how things work out. But I say Yates is, and Robertson are probably like a 60% chance around that. I think more likely than not, because I just don't see. I mean, the Rangers are playing a little bit better lately, kind of starting to get the bats warmed up a little bit here. But yeah, I don't know if it's too little too late. So Yates, let's say 60% chance. So, you know, all three of those guys could probably move, and maybe Josh Spores finally gets a chance if he's healthy to close out games down the stretch. But yeah, we'll see. Texas is going to be one of those teams where it's going to take a couple weeks until we really know what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Robertson has been traded in each of the past two seasons. So that's got to give him a little boost.
Yeah. I mean, he didn't pitch well when he got moved last year, but, you know, he's been lights out this year. So I do think, yeah, he's going to get you something, and that's better than just holding on to him and not making the playoffs and, you know, getting nothing for him. So, same with Yates. Cause you know, those guys aren't really part of the future. Maybe they re-sign for a year, but yeah, you can always do that in the offseason, even if you trade them now. So yeah, I would think both are possible targets for teams needing a eighth inning guy.
Totally. All right. And we'll stick in the AL East as we discuss the Los Angeles Angels, who have a number of expiring contracts, including a closer that should be on the move. Carlos Estevez has pitched very well this year in a career season and is set to be a free agent at the end of this year. Also, Luis Garcia and Matt Moore are currently healthy and are eligible to be free agents this offseason. So the Angels should have a selling spree this deadline.
They should, like, unlike what they did last year. So hopefully they don't think, oh, Mike Trout's coming back in late July, let's just go for it. But they might do that, because that's kind of what they've been doing. But yeah, Estevez should be, I have him at 90% likely to be traded. I would, the only way that they don't move him is if they just go on a ridiculous run in July and then they get Trout back and they're like four games out of a wild card spot and they're like, let's just go for it. But unless that happens, yeah, I think Estevez is gone. And then, yeah, you have guys like Matt Moore, Garcia, Cisneros, Simber, all these veterans on one-year deals who probably can get you something, and you just want to, you know, get whatever you can for those guys before August. So, this could be a whole different-looking Angels bullpen come August 1st because, yeah, a lot of veterans with one-year deals here.
Yeah, and the likelihood of Estevez becoming a closer wherever he lands is probably very low. Once again, this is a situation where it's like, unless he lands on the Royals,
it's gotta be
probably not going to be getting saves. Yeah, I mean, that's going to be the case for most of the guys, unless they're totally elite, which is the case with the next guy on the A's. The A's should be sellers this year, though they don't have much to sell out of their bullpen. Mason Miller is obviously somebody who's been talked about all year as a trade candidate. Though, I mean, he's like a once-in-a-generation closer for a team that doesn't really have many things to get excited about. He's got tons of control, so the likelihood of the A's trading Miller is probably low, though they will likely move on from TJ McFarland and Austin Adams, who are set to be free agents at the end of this season. Same with Scott Alexander, though. He's not that great, but Lucas Erceg is there as well. He's got a ton of control, so unless somebody really wants to give up a ton, Erceg's probably staying, and same with Miller.
Yeah, I got Miller at like 20% chance, and it's, some team's just going to have to, it's going to be like some team doing something stupid to get him to give up the prospect capital that it will take to get Miller. You know, I would just wonder, like, the Padres have been linked to like guys like Crochet. Like, what if they just miss out on everyone and they just give up some ridiculous package for Mason Miller? That just seems like an AJ Preller thing to do. It's like they're looking for a right-handed reliever and then they end up with Mason Miller. that just feels like a Padres thing. So yeah, that's like the 20, that's why I'm like 20%, like, or maybe the Dodgers just, you know, throw some prospects Oakland's way. And it only takes one team, like we said, and there's definitely concern for Miller as far as, you know, his health and what's his long-term role going to be. So Oakland could just, you know, take what they can get now. Similar to kind of what the White Sox are trying to do with Crochet, although he's got less term. But yeah, I think Miller probably going to stay in Oakland for this year. Maybe they look in the offseason to move him. Yeah, and then the other guys, yeah, like Adams, McFarlane, just become middle relievers somewhere, probably.
Yeah, not anybody to keep your eye on there. We'll go to the White Sox, who have a couple guys to trade. Michael Kopech is one of them, and he actually interests me just to see him get out of Chicago. He's been with them basically his whole career since being traded for Chris Sale. Yeah, this has not really been his year, but the stuff is still there. He's one of the hardest throwers in baseball, and I think if he lands in a better situation, he could become dominant. But for now, there's like 0% chance he becomes a closer no matter where he ends up, though I think the likelihood of him being traded along with John Brebbia, maybe not together, but both of them being traded is very high.
Yeah, I mean, I just really want to see Kopech somewhere else, because there's still, I mean, the numbers, no matter where, like they're very intriguing. You know, the walks need to come down a little bit, obviously, but with the increased velo this year, I mean, he's got a, you know, past 8 weeks, so I'm looking at guys, he's got a 35% CSW. Like, he's still missing bats at a very elite rate, and I just, you know, get him out of Chicago, get him somewhere. He's probably not a closer, but just get him somewhere where he can see consistent holds chances and, you know, a team with a little bit better pitching development, and see how far they can take things with him, because, you know, he's a free agent after next season. And I think, you know, 2026, he could be one of those guys who gets like a, you know, $10 million a year type relievers, possibly as a closer somewhere, if he, you know, ends up in the right system and has a good, you know, second half this year, good year next year. The stuff to be an elite reliever is there. It's just, you know, harnessing it all and putting it together.
We all know somebody's going to try to transition him back to the rotation, like what happened with Jordan Hicks.
No, see, that's different.
Is it? Is it now? Because he failed more than Hicks did?
No, you're probably Ronaldo. I mean, it's just like, yeah, I guess that could happen. And maybe it works out for someone else, like Ronaldo Lopez has worked out for Atlanta. So, or Jordan Hicks with San Francisco. Exactly. So, yeah, just get him out of Chicago. Get him somewhere where guys thrive and not struggle. Just go to die like Andrew Benintendi. And I mean, yeah, that team is just it's just sad over there.
Yeah. Not great. But Brebbia should also get himself out of there, but likely only as a middle reliever wherever he ends up. He's a free agent after this year, so he's guaranteed to go. We'll head over to Colorado, who, I mean, I don't know who would want to trade for these guys, but Jalen Beeks should be traded. He's somebody that is in his first year with the Rockies. He's set to be a free agent after this year. I mean, he's been like their closer, which I don't know if they're doing that just to sort of increases value at the deadline. And then Tyler Kinley's also there, but he's got an 8 ERA. Justin Lawrence is like the only guy that's ever interested me in this bullpen. And by that, I mean, when he leaves Colorado, because I'm not choosing anybody or streaming anybody while they're pitching for the Rockies. But Beeks and Kinley should be on the move. I mean, who are they going to be closing for?
No, they're not going to be closing anywhere. But Beeks is a lefty, and he's got, you know, no term. This is a free agent to be. Mm-hmm. You'd imagine, unless, again, like we joke about, they offer him $10 million to stay for the next, you know,
that's
year,
more likely.
Or they extend him to some ridiculous contract. They're still paying Daniel Bard. Tyler Kinley is the one guy who has like a team friendly. I'd have to double check, but he's got like two years left.
One more year.
He's got a player or a club option after that.
Club option for 26, and it's like
$3. $2 million. So I mean, I know he's been terrible, unfortunately, but maybe a team wants to take a chance on him getting outside of Coors, because there's still some. He does have a little swing and miss ability in him, and yeah, I just. Again, these two guys getting out of Colorado will definitely be a huge boost for them, no matter where it is, it's an upgrade. So
totally.
But yeah, they're not going to close anywhere.
All right. And our last team outside of five games of a playoff spot is the Marlins. So they are also likely to sell, and they might have the best option for buyers here, as Tanner Scott has pitched really well this year, 1.50 ERA, though the strikeouts are a little bit down. I think that's okay. He's definitely the top left-handed option. yeah, he's gone. He's a free agent after this year. And then outside of that, I don't think there's going to be many players traded. JT Chargois is a free agent after this year, so he should be gone. But Tanner Scott is really going to be the apple of most teams' eyes.
Yeah. And he's the one who's a 99% chance to go. And you say the strikeouts down, and it is overall for the season, but you know, it's gotten better lately. 30.6% K rate over the past 8 weeks. You know, he's got a 16.8% swing and strike rate over that span. So he's starting to, you know, those swings and misses are starting to come back for him. Stuff still there, 144 stuff plus. Yeah, that's, you know, for any contending team, I'm sure there's going to be 15 to 20 teams that are in on him. And I could see someone pointing up a little bit more just to get him before the deadline, because, you know, it's just a matter of time. And Miami should want to move him rather quickly too, just to make sure, you know, nothing, you never know, like something could happen injury related, or he has a bad streak of games that could affect some of his value. So he's hot right now. So I would think that there's a trade probably coming in the next 2 weeks for him. And yeah, any team could use him. Obviously, if you're rostering Tanner Scott, like I am in a lot of leagues, I'm hoping for Kansas City, just because that's the one spot where he's definitely going to end up closing. But there's other spots too, where, you know, even if he goes, we saw, what am I thinking? You know, there's this guy, he might not be the closer wherever he goes right away, but it only takes like an injury or just a couple bad outings from that team's closer for, you know, a guy like Scott to take over. So I think he's still, you know, depending on where he goes, I think you still might roster him just for a couple weeks afterwards, see how things work out, see how his usage is. But yeah, it's sad to see him leave Miami. And I think, though, it opens up a door for AJ Puck to return value again, where he was a good closer for the first half of last season. And I'm sure Miami wants him to be, you know, get that value back up so they could trade him either next year or the year after and get something for him as well, because he's probably not part of Miami's long-term plans. But I don't think they trade Puck right away. I think they want him to build his value back up as a closer.
Definitely. Why is it sad that Tanner Scott's leaving Miami? Because he was the closer there?
Just because he's a closer somewhere. And it's the fantasy relevance outside of holds leagues. It's because he's frustrating to watch, but he's still like a dominant, you know, closer 90% of the time. It's just that 10% where he's completely lost and can't find the zone. That's frustrating. But for the most part, he's really, really, really good. So, you know, seeing him, I mean, he's probably best as just a really good setup option somewhere. It's probably, you know, where when he signs this offseason, I'm guessing it's to a contending team as a setup option. But we'll see. We'll see. He's one of the better lefties in the game as far as relievers go.
Definitely. And that will wrap up the teams that are completely outside the playoff picture. The Rangers are close, but they'll have to play really well across the next couple of weeks to avoid being labeled sellers at the deadline. Now we'll go to the teams that are on the bubble. These are teams within five games back of a playoff spot. These teams, depending on how they play across the next couple of weeks, could either be sellers or buyers. So we'll keep that in mind as we go through them, starting with the Red Sox, who've got Kenley Jansen as their closer. I mean, that one could go either way. If the Red Sox are bad, he's gone. If the Red Sox are good, he stays. And no matter where he goes, I don't see why he wouldn't be the closer. Like, this Royals written all over it.
Well, yeah, the Royals were interested in him this offseason. So and then they settled for John Schreiber instead, and that hasn't exactly worked out. So maybe they get back in on Jansen. They probably want the Red Sox to eat some of that salary, but that's fine if they give up a good prospect or two in the deal. So it's really going to come down to this month for Boston. I think, like, I mean, we were talking a month ago, I had him at like 90% chance he was traded, because that's what it sounded like.
Yeah.
But for a team that's only like a game or two out of the wild card race, I don't see how you can trade him.
39.
I don't see how you could trade him if they're, you know, just a couple games out of the wild card. So, that's going to be one to just monitor how the Red Sox play this month. You know, they're starting to get some guys back healthy too, so this team could go on a little run in July. And as long as they're sticking around, I think he stays. But if they're five games out at the end of July, that's going to be where I think they might move him. And again, like we said, like Hendricks comes back potentially in August. So it's, you're not even, you're moving him, but you're not necessarily, you know,
getting worse.
Yeah. You're because Jansen's been fine this year, but he's not the guy he used to be. Like we all know that he's, you know, he is what he is at this point. So I don't think Hendricks would be any sort of downgrade if that's how they went. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And if the Red Sox do decide to trade, Chris Martin is likely out the door as well, as he's set to be a free agent at the end of the season. The next team on the bubble is the Astros. They continue to climb up and have gotten themselves pretty close to playoff contention right now. They're 43-42, which is crazy considering how they started the season. Mm-hmm. I think there was a stat that came out. I'm not going to pull up the stat because that would just take me the rest of the podcast to find it. But it was like something about how the Astros start early in the season. Teams that had started that poorly had made the playoffs like one out of like 150 yeah. times. And so it would be pretty crazy if they made the playoffs. But if they do decide to be sellers, Josh Hader probably not moving considering they just signed him. But Ryan Pressly, he's set to be a free agent. He is set to be a free agent. He's got a 2025 vesting option. I don't know what has to happen for that to vest. And then I don't know if it's a player or a club option.
I think it was, I'll double check. I think it was games finished, but I'm not positive. So that's, I mean, not something that he would have at this point, not being the closer. So, but anyway, yeah, I think he would be the one guy who they would probably look to move. Maybe Rafael Montero, I guess, would be another one. But,
yeah, he's still got another year control.
Yeah, and I think just, you know, he's not going to get them much in return anyway. Mm-hmm. So let's see. Yeah, the option vests with 50 appearances in 23-24. I don't know if he had 50 appearances last year.
Ryan Pressly had 65 last year.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, 65. He's at 35 he was there, right now. So that's vesting. So he's probably but then is it a player or club option? Because if it's a club option, then he's a free agent.
But $2 million, yeah, it's a $2 million buyout. So he can, So it's a club with a $2 million buyout. So that's not that bad.
He's a free agent.
He's essentially. That's if they struggle in July, but they're playing well right now, so I don't expect them to move anyone. But if they do, Pressly could, and that's a guy who has closer experience. Probably, you know, between Garcia and Scott, I think Pressly might be like the third best option available just based on his track record and experience closing out games the last couple of years. So keep an eye on Houston just to see how they, play the next couple of weeks. And if they are in the playoff race, they'll probably look to add a reliever as well. But yeah, no one's taking over Josh Hader in the closer role there.
Yeah. All right. The next team we have is the Cardinals. They have not been good this year, but boy, do they have a lot of options in the bullpen, though it will take a lot to get them to trade them because they're really good. Ryan Helsley still has another year of control after this year, but maybe the Cardinals will decide to sell high. He's currently on pace to break the single season National League saves record.
Yeah, he's at like six. So, yeah, I mean, he had another save tonight. It's just
he's at 31. The record's 55.
All of these Cardinals, he's on pace to smash that, I think. All these Cardinals wins are like 4-1, 3-2. It's all low scoring games. So I guess it's kind of reminds me of what the Mariners a couple of years ago had a similar string of, of luck, I guess, you would call it, but just winning close, low-scoring games. And it's kind of surprising with how this Cardinals starting rotation is, But they're finding ways to win games, and Helsley's been a big part of that. I just wonder if he can keep this up for, he's been used a lot and doesn't have the best track record of health. So,
yeah.
But I don't expect the Cardinals, unless they really fall apart, have a terrible July, maybe they'll consider moving Helsley.
Mm-hmm. They've turned it around a lot. I thought they were bad earlier in the year. Now they're 44-40.
Yeah. I mean, they just keep winning games like 4-3 and 2-1. It's
that Pythag record's got to be terrible.
Yeah. I that's why I'm not really sure. Like, yeah, they're in the wild card right now, spot right now, but they don't feel like they're a wild card or a playoff team. It's
maybe they will after they add some guys at the deadline.
Yeah, it could be, but I wonder if some of those teams catch the, like, I wonder if the Mets overtake them, or even I don't know, San Diego or Arizona gets hot. I don't know. Maybe it's the Cardinals year. Who knows?
Yeah. We'll see. If they do sell, though, I think Andrew Kittredge and likely Giovanni Gallegos are gone. Gallegos is really low value right now, but he has a club option next year, so he's going to be a free agent. And then Andrew Kittredge is set to be a free agent as well, and he's been pitching really well. I don't think they would do this, but there's a shot that even if they don't sell, they could still just trade Kittredge just because he's going to be a free agent. But that wouldn't make much sense considering how integral this bullpen has been to getting them where they are.
Yeah, it's been the whole, you know, it's been everything for them. As like we said, that they're winning games that, you know, really close, really low scoring games. And it's been because of Romero, Kittredge, Helsley, and, you know, hopefully Gallegos can figure in there too as well. So, I don't think St. Louis does anything as far as trading pieces away, but they'll probably add. I would think they would add maybe one bullpen piece, but they can certainly add, you know, to the lineup as well. So yeah, St. Louis probably not moving any relievers this year.
All right, we'll move over to the Giants, who are not doing great this year, 41-44, and they don't really have a lot of options to trade. They've got Taylor and Tyler Rogers, the twins, who are set to be free agents after next year, and then Camilo Duvall, who's set to be a free agent after 2027. Those guys seem very unlikely to be traded, considering there's still another year of control, and the Giants are sort of in that Brewers mold where it's like they're trying to compete every single year. But Luke Jackson is an option. He's said to be a free agent after this year, but he's got a 6.23 ERA. He's not been good.
Yeah, so I mean, he's not going to get you much. And yeah, I think it would take, again, like some of these other teams we're going to talk about, it would take a lot for them to give up Duvall and to give up the Rogers brothers too. It would probably be looking at like the Giants falling, you know, five or more games out of the wild card hunt. So yeah, they probably stay put at the deadline. Probably don't even, they don't really need to add. I don't think they add anything significant as far as bullpen help goes. So they're probably one of the teams that, you know, we're pretty safe moving forward.
All right. Next, we got the Nationals, who we talked about Kyle Finnegan a lot earlier. The Nationals are currently 39-46. I don't really expect them to be contenders, so I would expect them to be sellers. Kyle Finnegan and Hunter Harvey are the top two guys. And really, depending on how they do the next couple of weeks, I really think these guys could be traded. And like you said at the top of the podcast, they should be traded. Kyle Finnegan and Hunter Harvey are both set to be free agents after next season, so they'll still have another year of control. But this is probably the peak you'll be selling Kyle Finnegan at. And maybe somebody wants to take a chance on Hunter Harvey. But if those guys don't get traded, I think Dylan Floro is definitely gone, and probably Derek Law as well. I don't think anybody wants Tanner Rainey.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I mean, Floro and Law probably get something. Maybe, I don't know. But yeah, Harvey and Finnegan would be the two big pieces. And, you know, after Harvey's last couple of outings, I don't know how his value is definitely taking a hit now that his ERA is up to 4.35. But yeah, Finnegan all of a sudden is probably, I don't think they would, you know, trade him if he wasn't pitching as well as he is. I think that's just you got to look at selling high potentially on an asset that's not, you know, a long-term option for you. So
yeah,
I got Finnegan like 55-60% chance, just because, yeah, I mean, the Nationals aren't out of the playoff, you know, race at all. They could hypothetically make a run. You know, they just called up
James Wood.
I cannot
believe you got him like 2 minutes before I did. I was so pissed because you replaced the guy in my home league that was the guy who got all of the prospects. And so it was like he and I would battle for it all the time, whoever's the fastest to their phone. So when he left and you replaced him, I was like, oh, thank you, I'm going to get all of the prospects now. Well, I was wrong because I added the wrong guy to the league.
I needed like one fun.
No, hey, it's a smart move. I
didn't get him anywhere else. So I'm like, I need him somewhere.
Yeah. I got him in the staff league for like $63 in a $100 budget. Yeah. That was on purpose. I was like, I'm not missing him.
I like it. I mean, huge upside. And I've already been offered in our league. I've been offered Willie Castro for him. So that's getting solid trade offers for James Wood.
Classic.
But yeah, maybe this Washington Nationals team just decides to make a run at it. Mackenzie Gore's been pitching lights out. Yeah. Who knows? Maybe they add. But yeah, I would say Finnegan more likely than not is traded, just because he should be traded, if that makes any sense. Like, it just makes too much sense for this Washington, this team, just general plan moving forward.
Yep. All right. That's the Nationals. Next, we got the Padres. I would not expect the Padres to be selling, though they haven't been that great this year. They've got a 46-42 record. They're above 500, but I don't know. Either way, I think they're going to look to compete, so I wouldn't expect them to sell. If they did sell, though, they got a lot of interesting options. None, though, that are going to be free agents next year. I think that's the case.
None of them are. I just wonder if they might try to get out of like a Matsui or Peralta's like long term. Those deals were so weird for both of them. I guess Matsui kind of made sense, but Peralta was always the weird one. But it's like I guess it's cheap annual, like the annual value on it, the AAV. But Suarez too he's got a long term, and as you know, he's been a really good closer for them. So that deal actually looks, you know, pretty good right now. I know going into the season, people were like, why is he making so much money? But yeah, it looks good right now. I don't expect, AJ Preller's not looking to sell anytime soon. So
no,
they'll add if anything at the deadline.
Mm-hmm. All right. Next, we got the Diamondbacks. As we stick in the NL West, the Diamondbacks are 41-43. So they're certainly not out of it yet. We discussed this bullpen a lot earlier with Paul Sewald. Sewald is likely to be traded, considering he's going to be a free agent at the end of the season. And the Diamondbacks are currently out of the playoff picture, but you know, maybe the next couple of weeks changes that, and then they become buyers. But for now, Sewald looks to be the guy most likely to be traded because of his impending free agency. There's some other options as well. Miguel Castro, Scott McGuff, Ryan Thompson, Joe Mantiply. None of them have been super spectacular this year outside of Ryan Thompson. But I don't know, if you know Ryan Thompson, you sort of know what to expect there. And he's not a free agent until after 2026. So they're not really obligated to trade him either.
Yeah, I think Thompson's just because he's, you know, pitching really well, and he's 33, I think. So it's, you know, he's got some years left, but he's not exactly on the younger side. Sewald's the one that it's going to really come down to how Arizona plays over the next month and, you know, what they end up doing at the deadline. Because it's either they're just going to, you know, stay put or buy and he stays, or they're going to sell and he's definitely gone. So yeah, we'll see how Arizona plays the next couple weeks, and when we finally hear some sort of news, you know, if they are sellers, then I would imagine Ginkel, even though he hasn't pitched great, I still think he's probably going to be the closer moving forward if they move on from Sewald. That's a name to keep an eye on, and you know, if you're in deeper leagues, desperate for saves, maybe it's time to speculatively add him and just see how the next couple weeks play out.
Ryan Thompson and Mantiply are sort of in the same boat where they're not free agents until after 26, and they're both 33. And then McGuff and Castro are not with the team. Castro's been on the IL for like months, and McGuff is in the minor leagues. He's not been pitching well. So it feels like Sewald's the only guy that's likely to be traded. I wouldn't even put Kevin Ginkel in that Ryan Thompson, Joe Mantiply group, as he's a free agent after 2026, but he's younger. He's 30. So maybe they look to have him for the next couple of years. We'll move over to the Pirates, who've got David Bednar, who could be traded. I mean, they say that every single year. Yeah. And then they got Aroldis Chapman, who I feel like is all but guaranteed to be traded, considering not only was he traded last year, but he's also pitching as the closer right now. So that's only going to increase his value at the deadline. And he's turned things around from a slow start and has looked pretty solid recently. So I think Chapman's probably going to be pretty coveted at the deadline.
Yeah, I would say Chapman's like 80% likely to move, unless Pittsburgh's decided to make a run at this the playoffs. But their eye is set on 25-26. You know, they want to Jones and Skeens a full season from them the next couple of years and see how that works out. So yeah, I think Chapman's definitely, you know, 80-90% likely. Bednar, if he was healthy, it would be closer to 50%. But not being healthy, he's probably doesn't end up moving, and say like 30% chance. Maybe he can come back and prove that he's healthy, but I think this is a team that probably doesn't do a whole lot. Ryan Barricki's been rehabbing. He's an interesting lefty. If he's healthy, I think teams would look at. I believe he's on a 1-year deal, so that's the only guy they might end up moving. Outside mm-hmm. of Chapman, the two lefties, Chapman and Baruki.
Yeah. Yeah, and it felt like them signing Chapman was just to trade him during this deadline. So
it's just like the Royals last year, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like you sign him and it's just like, hey, maybe if we're competitive, we've got like a really good lefty out of the pen. And if not, we're trading him. We can go to the Mets, who, as we discussed, thanks to the power of Grimace, have suddenly become contenders in the playoff bubble. I don't know who they would trade. It would probably be Adam Ottavino and Jake Diekman if things started going south from here. But I think everybody else on the roster is pretty safe.
Yeah, they're not moving on from Diaz. That would be incredibly shocking.
Yeah.
But yeah, if all of a sudden the Grimace magic wears off and they start struggling, Ottavino and Diekman would probably be the only two guys if they move from this bullpen.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they're not going to get a ton. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're set to be free agents after this year. Diekman has a vesting option. We do not have to look that one up.
But, no.
but yeah, I think both of those guys are likely gone if the Mets are out of contention. We'll move over to the Reds as they employ the other Diaz. They should probably trade him, though. I don't think the value is that high. The Reds are not going to make the playoffs. I don't think they're still relatively close at 39-45, but they're... I don't know. I think in my head, they're far enough out that they're not going to make it. They don't have, they have guys they can trade, but they're not guys that are going to be making differences in bullpens. Emilio Pagan is probably the, best guy that could be traded out of this bullpen. And he's set to be a free agent after this year. He does have a player option for 25. So he's not guaranteed to hit free agency, but he'll probably actually exercise that option, but he's currently on the 60-day IL. So I don't even think you can trade a player that's on the 60-day IL.
Yeah, I think he's stuck there. I doubt they move on from Diaz. They really like him. So
for some reason,
maybe like they move Sims. I don't think they do. I think this team probably just stays put. They're not playing well, but it feels like they're not playing well, but the whole NL Central is just like a weird division to me, because somehow like the Reds and Cubs are still in it, but they're not playing well. And I feel like the Cardinals aren't playing well, but they're in the wild card right now.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting to see just like what the NL Central does in general here. I think Cincinnati probably just stays put and maybe sells off some small pieces like Suter. Wilson
should be gone too. I mean, he's gonna be a free agent.
Yeah, I guess they might move on from Sims. Someone might take a chance on his slider. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, not a lot of. I mean, Diaz would be interesting though. If someone were to be excited about Alexis Diaz, they shouldn't just shut the door on trading him. They should consider all offers there.
If I had to bet on one team making the playoffs of this group from the American League, it would be this next team, the Rays. It's like you can never count them out. Every time you think like, oh, this is not their year, it's like they figure something out. They know what they're doing. But if they don't, as they're currently outside of the playoff picture with a record of 42-42, which isn't terrible. So maybe they're on the upswing. But if they do decide to sell, Pete Fairbanks could be out the door, which would be very sad. But he's still got another year of control and a 2026 club option, so that would seem unlike the Rays. Outside of that, like Sean Armstrong's an option. Jason Adam could be traded. Who do you have leave in town if the Rays become sellers?
Yeah, I think Armstrong's is on the last year of his deal, and mm-hmm. Maton probably get moved. Poche maybe, because you can sell high on a left-handed reliever there. Poche has been pretty good when healthy this year. And then Fairbanks and Adam, it's probably a little under 50% they get moved. The Rays haven't been in this position in a while, so that's why it's and I feel like they don't need to necessarily like rebuild, but I feel like maybe a trade some of the veterans you have now, get some pieces and kind of refresh the farm system. I mean, the farm system is still pretty good, but like this is a team that's always going to win based on the guys that they develop. So right now, offensively, I just don't see them being a playoff team. But yeah, I mean, like you said, it's the Rays. You can't count them out. I would love to see Fairbanks in Kansas City. That'd be cool. Big ballpark. I just did. The only thing that worries me of Fairbanks is him pitching outdoors with his, you know, his, it's the thing that where is his hand.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, if it's some guy's cold, some dude's name.
Yeah, when it's cold out, and it's not too terribly cold in Kansas City, especially in the summer. But if, you know, if they're playing in October, it might get chilly there, and maybe his hand locks up on him, and then he's not as useful. So, like we saw when he was pitching in Cleveland a couple years ago. So, you know, I don't know. Fairbanks is it's just the Rays. They do trade. They'll make bold moves. So that's why I have Fairbanks at like 45% chance to move to be moved, but definitely not guaranteed.
Yeah. All right. And our last team is the Cubs. They're on the outside looking in. I think they're last place right now in the AL or NL Central. They're at 39 and 46.
They've fallen apart. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Hector Neris is probably out the door. I don't know how much they'll get for him. He does have a club option for 2025, but declined. That's likely to be declined. It's $9 million. He's got a 4.25 ERA. Outside of Neris, Jorge Lopez and Drew Smyly are both free agents after this year. They're not super enticing, especially after Jorge Lopez's thing earlier this year with the Mets. And then Mark Leiter Jr. is there. He's still got one more year of control, and he's got a 5.34 ERA, and he's on the IL. So the likelihood there might be small, but it looks like Hector Neris, Drew Smyly, and Jorge Lopez should be gone.
Yeah, I mean, has Lopez even pitched for them yet? I know he just got called up.
Yeah, he pitched he pitched two times this week.
They may. I mean, I don't know if he's. Yeah, because there was no interest in him originally. So we'll see what his value's at. But yeah, Leiter's the only other one, just because, you know, maybe they could, if he can come back healthy this month and, you know, prove he can help a team out down the stretch, they could. That's probably the reliever that gets them the most value, unless they moved, again, Alzolay or Merriweather, who were both hurt as well. So, yeah, there's not a lot of – they're not going to get a lot of return from moving relievers if they do sell.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Neris is gone, and I'm sure a team will take a chance on him just to see if they can recapture the magic he had last year.
All right. And now that we've run through all of the sellers and the potential sellers, we can touch on a couple of the buyers. I think the Royals are definitely the clearest buyers. They're currently in the playoff picture. Their closer is James McArthur. He's not doing well. I've seen him dropped in both of my 15 team leagues, which is crazy. But they are likely to try to replace James McArthur as the closer, as that's the clearest spot on the team that could use an upgrade.
That's the only team right now that's like, definitely going to have a new closer, I would say, by August, and a closer from outside the organization. You know, we talked about the Dodgers before we came on, like maybe the Dodgers could get greedy and try to add like an elite closer who's better than Evan Phillips. But, you know, outside of that, Rangers, Reds, or Cubs end up making, you know, a playoff push here in July, I think those three teams would definitely be looking for relief help. But, you know, if the Rangers do make a run, it's probably because their bullpen has been really good. I mean, we talked about how good their bullpen's been last week. And, but the Reds and Cubs, definitely, if one of those teams makes a run for the playoffs in July, then they will have to add a reliever and preferably a closer for both of those teams.
Totally. All right. I'm sweating. I am dripping sweat.
I'm sweating over here. Yeah,
all right. But yeah, that'll do it for this episode of In the Pen that we have run down and prepared and primed you for the trade deadline. Now you know everybody that's going to be traded or could be traded and who might be buying them. Not a lot of change in the closer situations, but I mean, that's usually expected. But that'll do it for this episode of In the Pen. Rick, why don't you go ahead and plug your Twitter and anything else you're working on?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at I am Rick Graham. As always, just, you know, working on Closing Time, Hold Up, and Save Plus Hold articles each week. And yeah, I'm looking forward to July. Is always a fun time in baseball with the trade deadline, All-Star game, MLB draft. It's kind of that middle part of the year where things, you know, pick up a little bit again as far as, you know, fun things to look forward to. Yeah.
And then the worst month of baseball, August.
August. Yeah, August is a bit of a drag, but then it gets better in September, you know, the pennant races and all that.
Mm-hmm. All right. You can follow me on Twitter at Jake Crumpler. You can follow the pod at In the Pen Pod. You can find all of my work at crumplerbaseball.com. More specifically, over at pitcherlist.com, I do the Monday editions of our daily reliever ranks article. I do the weekend editions of our daily first pitch podcast. And over at Baseball HQ, I do playing time analysis for the Giants, A's, and Diamondbacks. So go check out all of my work. Go check out all of Rick's work. And go check out all of the amazing work we have over at pitcherlist.com. We'll talk to you all next week.